Well, hello and welcome to CBI at 10. My name is Liz Mosley and I'm an editor at Tortoise, here to facilitate the session today. And I'm delighted to be joined by three brilliant, brainy women who really know their way around a topic that has shot up boardroom agendas in the last 5 years or so. I was saying before we went live that towards the back end of last year, our first in-person event that we had here in the newsroom at Tortoise following a year and a half or so of lockdown was a cybersecurity summit. I was dreading it because I thought it would be unbelievably dry and I wouldn't understand it at all. But actually, pleasantly surprised to find myself being able to grasp it and really being able to care about it. It felt very present and very real, even for somebody who, as a journalist, ostensibly isn't sort of live and working day to day on this stuff in the way that these three women are. So I'm thrilled to have Susanna, Sarah and Sarah with us. Let's make a start if we can. We're going to dive straight in because it's a big topic and there's a lot to know about with Susanna O'Dell, your head of digital policy at the CBI. Hi, Susanna. Nice to see you.
Hi, Liz.
So I know that today you've kind of gathered together a bit of a one-stop shop on the CBI website that is pointing members to best practice guidelines and things for every company who needs to be thinking about this, whether you're a giant bank or a teeny tiny kind of one-man band. Just give us a bit of a summary of what CBI members are saying to you about how they are assessing their own cybersecurity risk and what they're doing to mitigate some of those risks.
So I think the first thing to say is that we put together this one-stop shop because we are just hearing so much from businesses across the UK about cybersecurity. We've really seen that kind of growing interest and concern. So we wanted to kind of do more, make sure that we're helping signpost businesses to the correct kind of guidance, sharing best practice on what they need to be doing. And that's one of the reasons why we're here today on the webinar. But I think in terms of where businesses are at the moment on cybersecurity and the kinds of conversations that we've been having, I think there's definitely a growing interest and concern amongst businesses across the UK. I think firms recognise that they are in a very different place to how they were a few years ago, and firms want to be on the front foot thinking about their cyber resilience and also kind of what they can do to improve that. So both in terms of the last few weeks and kind of increasing heightened kind of cyber threats, but also in the last few years around the pandemic, I think firms are cognizant that there are, you know, different factors at play now. And so their cyber threat as a business might have been changing. And there are a few reasons for that. I think the first one is around the growing digital presence that a lot of firms have now online. So we saw 3 years of innovation in the first 3 months of the pandemic. Really, that was a lot of tech adoption, a lot of businesses collecting new kinds of data, a lot of remote working. And stats from last year show that 96% of UK businesses now have some sort of digital exposure. So I think there are a lot of companies that are kind of have adopted new technologies, might be bringing together different kinds of legacy systems with new systems that might not speak to each other. So there's more presence online, which changes the threat landscape. And I think firms are starting to think about that, particularly because a lot of that tech adoption was done very quickly out of necessity. Then alongside that, we've had lots of conversations with businesses about the increasing value of their digital assets. So as they operate more online, they might have more digitally stored IP, they might have more business critical data, or be providing kind of digital services to other businesses or into government. So firms are aware that they're more on the front line than maybe they used to be. And so are aware that the kind of the potential prizes, quote unquote, for cyber criminals are getting bigger. And then the third factor that we've been talking to businesses about is the current situation, the conflict in Ukraine, and I'm sure Sarah from the NCSC will talk more about this later. But taking all of those kind of contextual factors together, what really feels different now and in the last couple of weeks is that we've had so many conversations with businesses, almost kind of no matter what the subject, and we're kind of asking them about generally how their business is doing. Cyber comes up time and time again. from manufacturing companies to agri-food to logistics. So I think the level of interest really feels different. The kinds of questions feel very different. So they're a lot more practical, kind of how has my cyber risk changed in the last couple of weeks? What should I be doing? And particularly kind of how much is proportionate? You know, is what I'm doing as a business enough in terms of investment, in terms of focus? And I'm sure we'll talk about that today. And then the final piece is really the level of seniority at which these conversations are happening. So I think we're starting to see cyber move kind of out of IT departments and at board level, senior business leaders saying, actually, what should I know? What should I be doing? How can I make sure that my business is taking this seriously? So that's really how the conversation feels like it's changed over the last couple of weeks.
Brilliant, Susanna, that's a fantastic scene setter for us. So much more in terms of digital presence, both in commercially and just the operations of your business, adopted at pace because the pandemic happened, systems not quite talking to one another, plus all of the things we've said about the geopolitical scenario makes this a very real and present, I don't want to say danger, but a real and present issue for businesses. So let's go to Sarah to sort of dive into some of those questions. Sarah, you're Deputy Director from the National Cyber Security Centre in glorious Cheltenham. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's just take that question about Ukraine-Russia conflict. So very real, very live. But Susanna's question is, how much is proportionate? Is this a material shift relative to the beginning of February before it happened?
Sure. Well, hello, Liz. Hello, everyone. It's great to be with you. I'm from the National Cybersecurity Centre, the government's technical authority on cybersecurity. And we exist to try and make the UK the safest place to live and work online. It was really fantastic to hear from Susanna all of the discussions that have been going on between the CBI and the membership. So to your question, Liz, yes, I mean, following the invasion of Ukraine, the National Cybersecurity Centre, you know, continues to do in a way what we were doing before, which is to call upon organisations in the UK to bolster online defences. In regard to the geopolitics, we're not aware of any specific cyber threats to UK organisations in relation to events in Ukraine. But we want to help organisations to work on being prepared. We want to make sure organisations understand the things that they need to be ready for. And we are seeing, even though there's no specific threats, we do see that recent incidents are quite similar to a pattern of Russian behaviour that we've seen before in similar situations, including an attack called NotPetya in 2017, I think. And that attack used malware to encrypt victim data. It was primarily focused on attacking Ukraine's finance and public sectors, but it really impacted businesses right across Europe, including in the UK, and it cost companies at least hundreds of millions of pounds in lost revenue, in recovery costs and so on. And the UK government did attribute responsibility for the NotPetya attack to the Russian government. So it is really important that at these periods of tension that businesses are thinking really seriously about their risks. And I guess from an NCSC perspective, what we are doing at the moment is we're really obviously monitoring the situation closely to make sure that organisations can stay ahead of the threats that they might face. And I guess most importantly for this audience, we have produced detailed guidance on actions for organisations to take when the cyber threat is heightened. And we've worked closely with Susanna and her team in a lot of developing that. The key message of that guidance is really, really simple in a way. The most important action that your security teams can take to protect your organisation is really to review incident management processes and ensure that all your fundamental controls are in place. Our advice also encourages organisations to register for something called early warning, which is a service that we offer, which may be appropriate for many businesses. And that allows the NCSC to inform organisations of any malicious activity and advises organisations that fall, and we advise organisations that may fall victim to a cyber attack to report in to our 24/7 incident management team in NCSC.
Thanks so much, Sarah. So I'm not sure if those were the three things people can do today, or I think I might have heard two, but we mentioned, didn't we, that there was a sort of, if you're sitting here as a member of the CBI thinking, oh my good grief, I feel exposed, now I'm scared, what do I need to have done? What's my tick box of jobs to do this Wednesday?
Excellent. Well, thank you for that helpful tee up. So I guess, yeah, what should businesses be doing today to really stress test their resilience to cyber attacks? So I think the first thing I would say is really prepare your response plans and understand your capability. So your response plans should really prioritize what are your essential functions, along with the assets and the systems that are required to ensure continued effective operation for your business. So these might be operational technologies, they might be key data sets, but get your plans ready and practice them, so go through them. The second thing I would say is to make a regular, daily, weekly, whatever's appropriate for you, offline backup of your essential information. And regularly test that the backup is working and that you can access it, so that if the worst happens, you can restore your information from it. And then the third thing, which is something we should all be doing anyway, which is exercise. Running a cybersecurity exercise is a really effective and very immersive way to evaluate, to practice skills, that to understand the decision-making mechanisms that you would need if you have to respond in the heat of a cyber incident. And we find that a cyber exercising tool can be one of the most cost-effective ways an organization can test its ability to deal with cyber incidents. And, you know, for anybody who's listening who thinks that's great, but I don't really know how to do that, I would direct people to start by looking at Exercise in a Box, which we have on the NCSC's website. It's an online tool. It's free, and you don't have to be an expert to use it, and it helps you to test and practice your response to a cyber attack. There are a range of scenarios that you can try, and you can find it on our website. So they sort of take 10 to 20 minutes to run, depending on the exercise.
I would like to add my own from experience, really endorse that advice that Sarah just gave, to run an exercise. My job that I had before this one, I was chief marketing officer of a big media company, and this is going back, I think it could be sort of 5-6 years ago, we were invited to a sort of off-site senior leadership meeting. As far as we were aware, we went to this sort of offices of a PR company in the city of London, and there we all were sort of mooching around, drinking coffee and eating biscuits before it started. And suddenly someone said, something really terrible has happened, we all need you in the boardroom straight away. And it was a simulation of a cyber attack on our organization live. Of course, we had no idea what we were doing. Everybody went into complete panic mode, and we did a very comprehensive job of doing everything wrong that you could possibly do. So I cannot strongly enough that idea of running an exercise, a simulation, is really, really brilliant for focusing the mind and just helping everybody's roles, not just the IT people, or not even just the COO. It goes to everybody in the organization, and it really fundamentally changed the culture of our business. I'm going to come to Sarah Stevens now, the other Sarah, if I may. Sarah, you're international head of cyber at Marsh, big insurance firm. Just tell us a little bit about Marsh and what your role is there, just so we know where you're coming from.
Yeah. So Marsh is the world's leading insurance broker and risk advisor. So, you know, we operate in 130 countries around the world. We work with big companies, we work with medium-sized companies, small companies, individuals. And from a cybersecurity perspective, we try to meet our clients in those moments that matter to their cyber resilience journey. So, you know, in practical terms, there's a huge moment of truth when you have an incident and you're in that panic, whether it's, you know, real or practice. And the other kind of key moments of truth are when companies are asking, how are we at risk? So how do we assess our risk landscape and what's important to us as an organization? How can we build resilience? So how can we think not just about prevention, but how do we think about things like practicing for when an incident happens, detection, escalation? You know, what risk strategies are right for us? So that kind of can, you know, run the gamut from putting more money into prevention, to putting more money into practice, to buying insurance, to alternative risk transfer. A lot of companies obviously ask us then what insurance do we need and how much? So helping to quantify the risk, not just put a finger in the air and say what's available. And then the other question or the other moment of truth that our clients often experience is, who do I trust? There are so many risk experts out there. And so how do I get the best advice that's right for me and not just what's best in class? And so that's what Marsh does, is we kind of, we're the glue in between, kind of bringing a lot of parties together to help our clients solve cyber risk.
That is fascinating, Sarah, because when you talk about risk assessment, I suppose that's kind of step one in sorting out your cybersecurity, isn't it? How exposed am I? What are the parts of the business that might be vulnerable? And before you even get into, and how therefore might I protect them, you know, how can I mitigate that risk? What are some good first steps before we get into who do you trust? Because I think there are some people out there selling snake oil in this space too, you know, software that says it'll do something that it won't. Well, how do I do a good job? Let's say I'm a medium-sized business, you know, and I've understood the things that Susanna outlined at the beginning about, I've increased my digital presence, I have a more of a digital operation now because people are working remotely. How do I do a good job of saying, okay, this is my risk assessment, in order that we can get into the next question, which is proportionality? What do I need to invest there for?
Yeah, I will steer away from total self-promotion here, but I would say what you want to do is to develop scenarios that are relevant for your business. What's the thing that could go wrong for us? And that could be, you know, you need to know what your key systems are. Where's your key data? What are your key dependencies? Are you really reliant on a particular cloud service provider, or are you a manufacturer? And so your supply chain is what's most relevant, and interruptions there. So you need to develop your scenarios kind of first. And then as you develop those scenarios, think about, all right, if the worst thing happened, how much would it cost our organization? And then start to layer on top of that, what controls do we have in place? And that's where I think standards and frameworks like NIST, CSF, ISO, you know, those can be really helpful in assessing the control framework. But looking just at controls in a vacuum without having first understood what scenarios are important to you kind of misses the point. So I would say, you know, using kind of a combination of all those things, we offer a free online tool where businesses can assess their risk and then get an idea, you know, very high level of what the worst case scenarios would be and where their control gaps are. So I would say you kind of need to start there, but looking first at just controls and where my gaps are really misses the point, and it doesn't help you to direct your investment. So, you know, Susanna made the point about, you know, where do I invest? What am I sort of spending money on? Understanding how to prioritize what you do has to be linked back to what's important to you, not just, well, I don't have MFA in place, so I better get it. You know, that can be a bit of a panic mode decision if it's not relevant to your organization.
What's MFA?
MFA is multi-factor authentication. You log in and you get a text message.
Thank you. So Sarah, NCSC Sarah, I want to dig more into this question of proportionality. So Sarah Stevens says, okay, so the way you do your risk assessment is to think through a worst case scenario planning, which is a disastrous piece of advice for me because I can really go there with worst case scenarios. but is there such a thing on the sort of proportionality? I understand about framing the sort of the strategy, the cybersecurity strategy, to the areas of biggest exposure, working through what the consequences might be. I understand that. But is there such a thing as a completely safe business, or do I have to be comfortable with some level of risk?
Any business is going to experience different forms of risks. And in a way, I guess cybersecurity is something that has to be managed as a risk in the way you would manage any other reputational risk or financial risk. And so in order to determine what constitutes a proportionate approach for your business, it's going to be different for every type of business and organisation. And I think, you know, what Sarah was just saying is really helpful for getting every business to really understand what's right for their organisation, for the risk that they face. You know, it's really important that you've got that understanding of the sort of technologies and systems that you know, make your business run, you have to prioritize those and consider what is the impact if that is unavailable to me or I'm locked out of that one. And the sort of really basic understanding of what you care about and why it's important will then help you understand what you must be protecting when you do this. And then I would sort of be layering onto that, just as Sarah said, really, you know, who might attack you? You know, it's funny when we sit in our organizations, it's easy to think these are things happening elsewhere to someone else and that we are not a target for another state or whatever. But, you know, all organizations, regardless of the size or the profile, are at risk from what we would call commodity attacks, which are quite basic vulnerabilities that are known in systems that can be exploited using very readily available hacking tools. So all businesses are at risk of that. And then how you might be vulnerable is the other question I would really think through. And this is where we get into the controls, working out whether the security controls for each of those critical systems is appropriate for the level of threat that that you might face as a business. And you know, most cyber attacks are really preventable if basic controls are in place. Yeah. And then you can really narrow down what you need to worry about the most, and work out how some quite basic protection can really help you. You know, Cyber Essentials is a really good basic standard of technical controls. You might find that you need something a bit more than that in your business. So it's a process of just thinking through these really key critical systems and prioritizing them. What do you really need to protect?
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Practical question coming here from David Penn. I'm going to throw it to Susanna, but anybody else jump in, which is tips for really good cybersecurity training, both in terms of format and frequency, because from my memories of working in a big organization where I had some responsibility for this kind of thing, it wasn't a one and done. You know, we had to do it quite often, a refresher and not just the sort of, oh my goodness, there's a threat exercise planning. It was the sort of day to day how we do this right. Susanna, have you got ideas for how best organizations can sort that stuff out?
Yeah, thanks, Liz. And it's definitely the right question to be asking. I think, you know, one of the key points we have in our one-stop shop on our website is, you know, knowing and training your people around this. You know, you're only as cyber secure as all of your employees, as your supply chain. So I think the training point is absolutely key. There are resources on the NCSC website around some of this, so I might go to Sarah and after I'm finished. But I think exactly right. It's regular training. Again, bringing your people both into kind of the training aspect regularly, but also thinking a bit about how you can involve your people in setting your cyber strategy as well. You know, they're doing the day-to-day working with systems, might be aware of potential vulnerabilities or threats that that others in the organization might not be aware of. So really making sure that cyber feels like a whole business focus, a whole business responsibility, can really help then with things like the training. If every employee kind of understands what their responsibility is, making sure that they're kind of updating their systems regularly, that they're changing their passwords regularly. So really that whole kind of culture piece, some of that comes from the training, some of that comes from kind of other conversations you have in the business. But yeah, NCSC is the kind of the place to go, I think, for specifics on guidance.
Brilliant. And there's some links in the resource. Sarah, were you going to jump in on that?
Yeah, I mean, just to support that, really, I mean, it's a great question about training, but as Susanna just mentioned, it's a much bigger question of culture for me. So, you know, if you as an organization set security policies that don't work for people, they'll just go around them. That's human nature to kind of go around things. So actually you have to set right from the top a kind of culture which rewards good security practice. And so, for example, you know, I know a lot of organizations run sort of little phishing exercises to see if employees will click on links. Well, you know, if people do inadvertently click on a link and then report it, they should be rewarded for reporting that they've done that, because actually then the teams can take action quickly. And so I guess it's about how do you embed those things? How do you use tools that are available, you know, to help staff feel comfortable in this space? And they need to see it right from the top down. So, you know, we have a special kind of button. If an organization is using the Office 365 suite, there's a special button. And if you see a dodgy email, you press it and it comes straight to the NCSC. And we see if it's malicious. And if it is, it takes it down, takes that web address down. So it protects not just you and your organization, it protects everyone else as well. And we also have, if you're interested in training packages, we have any organization can take a package we've got on called Top Tips for Staff, which is also available to download from the website, and you can incorporate it into your own learning and management system, and you're able to then use it with your staff as regularly as you want, and it provides all the different topics that people should understand and know about. But I can't emphasize enough that that doesn't work if the culture of the organization isn't right around that.
Can I add one thing to that also?
Yeah.
It's just that I also think it's directly related, and this is an opportunity for businesses, you know, thinking about the consumerization of IT generally. People expect things to be easy. They expect them to work. So your investment in embedded security tools and making, you know, having a single sign-on, you know, just to make it easier for people to regularly change a complex password, things like that make a big difference in, you know, kind of cutting down on shadow IT, cutting down on people going around the rules, people writing down their password on a post-it note on their desk. You know, all those things are directly correlated with your willingness to invest to make the experience of employees better.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I hadn't really properly thought about the culture point, but remembering in my previous role, and I know that we've said, and I think it's right, that this isn't just the preserve of the IT department, but the implementation of these solutions and the embracing of them. In that particular role, the tech team were really celebrated. The guy that was the chief information officer was a big personality. He was visible and a leader. He wasn't sort of in a shadowy, sad office at the side. You know, he was very much part of it. And his team, that they were really loved by the organization for kind of keeping the show on the road. And that, I think, really helped in the implementation of, you know, we're going to have to do this thing now with passwords, or everybody needs to come on a lunchtime and we're going to go through this thing again. It really made a big difference to people not finding that it was a bind, but respecting them and sort of cherishing it as an important sort of culture moment. I'm going to talk, Sarah Stevens said something really interesting earlier on. I'm going to talk about ransomware in a second, but Sarah's even said, one of the big questions that you've got to get your head around is, who do you trust? And it reminded me, Susanna, of something you said, where you have to think about your cybersecurity sort of plan, if you like, as a supply chain, because you are going to have to be making procurement decisions. You're going to have to bring people in who are sort of going to hold in their hands very real commercial and reputational risks for your organization and trust them with those. Just, Susanna, maybe to talk us through a little bit some of how I start to think about this as a supply chain, why that really matters, and how do I piece together what feels like a good and comfortable team effort?
And this is exactly one of the questions that we've been talking to members about recently. It really feels like it's come up the agenda, partly because of other conversations I think firms are having and around supply chains, but really thinking about why cyber resilience is a kind of supply chain conversation, and just how important it is to make sure that your individual business is cyber resilient, but then also kind of down the chain, you know, two companies, three companies down or up the chain, they have the same kind of cyber resilience as you do. So it really feels like a team effort. I think some of the questions that businesses can ask and conversations they can have with their others in their supply chain is around what practices they have in place, where when you're kind of signing contracts, when you're starting on a business journey with another business, thinking about where your responsibility for cyber ends and where theirs begins, and making sure that there isn't a gap between the two. So really thinking about cybersecurity as that kind of whole chain. And then having conversations really about best practice and lessons learned. I think that is where there is a real opportunity for businesses across their supply chain saying, we tried this, it didn't work, or we've started to put this new practice in place because we're aware of, you know, this particular threat within our sector or within our supply chain generally. So having those very open conversations with others in your supply chain, I think can be really useful. And the other thing to say is really just, I think the role of larger companies in supporting the SMEs in their supply chain, who might not have the kind of resources to really be thinking about cybersecurity in the same way. So I think making sure that kind of SMEs in the supply chain are trusted partners, helping them with training, again, having those conversations about best practice, can really kind of raise the level for everyone in the supply chain. So I think there's a kind of larger company, smaller company dialogue and coordination that can happen.
That's really interesting. I can see both Sarahs nodding as you talk about the sort of big fish, little fish relationship. Does that really happen, Sarah Stevens, in real life? You get a big company and a small company in one cybersecurity chain where the big company altruistically helps the little company, you know, make the thing work. Does that happen?
I think in an ideal world, it happens. I think of it, there's like a layer cake, isn't there, of stuff you do to secure the supply chain, you know, involving insurance. And, you know, you start with, what do we need this smaller company to do? What are the requirements we're going to impose on them? But one of the ways you can check and validate that is to make them buy insurance. So you say, right, we require you, like, this is one of the reasons why you require insurance in contracts. It's not just so that there's somebody to pay the bill if something goes wrong. It's also because, you know, if you're requiring property insurance, somebody checked to make sure they had the right locks in place. It's the same thing with cyber insurance. You're actually taking advantage of that feedback loop of insurance markets assessing the risk, enforcing certain controls to make smaller companies eligible for insurance. And it's a, I mean, I wouldn't say really it's a way to outsource that responsibility, but it's a way to help get someone else who is an expert in that size and industry of firm who's in your supply chain to help them along and then get a bit of a trust mark stamp when they've achieved it. So I think that's one way we see larger companies working with smaller companies. But again, it depends on the number of vendors in the chain. It depends on what activities they're undertaking. You know, if we're talking about someone who is running your CRM system, that's a different, that's a really different conversation than someone who is providing you with a widget that becomes part of your finished product. So it's a little bit horses for courses on how much help a larger company gives to somebody in that chain.
Yeah, great. Sarah, did you want to come in on that?
Well, yeah, I was just going to sort of answer that, you know, the supply chains are really complicated. And I do think that larger companies do have a role in supporting smaller companies in this way. But I guess what I wanted to say was, it's back to that, it's been really important to understand what needs to be protected and why. Not all suppliers are the same. And actually, whatever you ask of your suppliers should be sort of justified. It should be proportionate to the particular, whether it's the widget or whether it's the customer relationship management tool, to the provided service. And it should also be achievable for that organization. So do you think that it's really important, rather than just sort of blanket requirement, but getting to know your suppliers, understanding their current security posture, making those sort of justified, proportionate and achievable asks of them, and building all of this into your normal contractual processes so you can manage the security throughout the life of the contract. I think it's really, really important.
That's fascinating. Thanks so much. I promised we would talk a little bit about ransomware for fun. Susanna, do you want to open the bidding on the questions CBI members are asking about ransomware and why this continues to be a sort of particular bogeyman in this whole world?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really that businesses have an increasing understanding that ransomware is an issue and something that they should be concerned about. And so that's really the starting point for firms. They're asking, you know, do I need to change my cyber practices specifically to deal with ransomware? Some of the questions for businesses are, you know, what is it and what's it focused on? You know, what's it, what are cyber criminals kind of trying to achieve by that? What are they trying to get access to? So it goes back to the points that we've already talked about in terms of what really needs protecting. So for some companies, it feels like quite early stage conversations. What is it? What do I need to do? For others, I think it's, you know, definitely high up on the risk register as a kind of growing threat for companies. So it feeds into the kind of the proportionality point. How much is enough? What do I need to be doing? What is it? So that's kind of the conversations that we've been having. But again, there is some really good NCSC guidance available on ransomware that we've been directing firms to.
Sarah Stevens, is there anything in particular in relation to ransomware that is different from what we've already discussed? I don't know why it seems to be that ransomware, it's the kind of it's the celebrity, the sort of more mainstream, well-known version, because people, I suppose it happens to individuals too a little bit.
Well, I think that the real change that we've observed in the last 5 years is that ransomware became much more accessible and much more pervasive. And it became much easier for criminals to like get into the ransomware game. So if you're a bad guy and you want to make money from crime, you could, you know, like move drugs across the border of countries, or you could subscribe to a ransomware as a service application as an affiliate. It's as easy as signing up for a Gmail account, and they provide all the infrastructure for you. They run the attack, they provide marketing, they provide customer support, you know, all of it is kind of there depending on how much you want to pay and what level of subscription you want to sign up for. And so I think that sort of shifted in the last 5 years again. And what that meant for companies is they have had to slightly shift their mindset, because prior to that being so accessible and so widespread, you know, when you were a bad guy, you had to like choose the company you wanted to attack based on what you were going to get. So maybe you had a political motivation, like maybe you wanted to cause interruption, but really it was like, what can I steal that I can then monetize in some way? And now the attack itself is the monetization. Yeah, and so really, instead of looking at like who has valuable jewelry inside their house, it's just whose door is unlocked and therefore can I get in? And so that's meant companies had to shift from why would I be attacked to is there anything making me an attractive target just on the perimeter? And that, so that mindset for a lot of our clients has changed their view of do I really have cyber risk or not? Instead, there is a basic focus on just making sure you're not an attractive target from the outside because you don't have any glaring security flaws. So that's been a little bit of a change. And that, again, that's why we signpost clients back to the Cyber Essentials or to the kind of NCSC guidance right now around how to shore up things so that you're not the one that gets broken into.
Yeah. We're into our last 5 minutes, unbelievably. There's a Sarah Stevens, I think you mentioned a free online tool on the Marsh website. If there's a link that you can share, people will be interested to have a dig around for that too. I'm quite struck actually, Sarah, that both Sarahs, that there haven't been as many questions during this conversation as there usually are. And I'm wondering how to take that, whether it is that people are just furiously writing down everything you're saying and thinking, my goodness, I'm going to have to get across this, or that it really is something that people feel perhaps less comfortable to come to the table and ask about. Sarah, NCSC Sarah, is it your sense that there is a good level of understanding and confidence in this space? Or do you think that businesses are sort of really at the beginning of the journey and feeling that they're feeling their way?
It's a really interesting question. And I guess like most things, there's a spectrum. I'm going to refer back to something Sarah Stevens said earlier, which is actually my experience in after 5 years of doing this job, is that there's nothing like an incident to sharpen the minds of any organization about their cybersecurity. And I really would urge people who are listening to not wait for that moment. The more you can do to prepare, the easier it will be to respond and recover if you have an incident. And whatever the size or profile of your business, there is lots of really good advice and support available to help you take the steps that are appropriate to you. I'm not a technical specialist. I don't come into this knowing lots of technical stuff. My job is to take the really good technical knowledge of NCSC and make it actionable and accessible for businesses and organisations. And so a lot of the things you'll find on the NCSC and other really good websites is really aimed at helping to make it easy to do a few good things to make your business more resilient. And I really would encourage people to do that now. You know, when you've got threats like ransomware, where during 2 years of lockdown, people could sit at home, you know, sending out their ransomware attacks and just, you know, seeing what they got back. You know, it's a lot easier than planning to raid a bank vault. You know, that means that all of us are more vulnerable to that. But the good news is there's so many of these attacks can be stopped if you've got some quite basic controls in place. You don't have to be an expert. You know, just when you run even a smaller business and you're thinking about other types of insurance or you're thinking about your premises, you need to do a bit of thinking about your online and your digital presence as well. And, you know, a small investment of time, not necessarily money, but could be money, can really help protect you against the majority of cyber attacks.
Yeah, that's great. A great message, Sarah. And Sarah Stevens, just before we close, as somebody who's in the thick of this and working with clients all the time, what's your one sort of parting piece of advice for people who are listening today?
Well, after you've read through all of the latest NCSC guidance and taken care of your key cyber hygiene gaps, I would say it's shift your mindset from just prevention to acceptance that some attacks are going to happen. Focus on resilience. Think about what are the scenarios that are important for my business, and therefore how am I going to direct my investment, whether it's time, money, or both, to make sure that I can get through an incident when it occurs.
Absolutely. I just think it's completely fascinating. I do hope that everybody has found it useful. Heartfelt thanks to Sarah and Susanna, and to everybody who has listened, or if you're listening live. I guess the message is worst case scenario planning, yes, but panic, no, because there's a danger that you get caught in that moment of, oh my goodness, it's going to happen, but I can't possibly, and it's all too difficult. It isn't too difficult. The advice really is out there. And taking steps now is always better than waiting in the vain hope that you might be one of the ones that gets away with it, because the chances are you won't be. So thank you so much, everybody, for your time this morning. It's been really, really fascinating. Get involved in those resources. They are there to help, and they are understandable even for a technophobe. So good luck with it all. And join us again next time for CBI at 10. And as I always say, go put the kettle on before you look at your emails. Take care. Bye.